Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning, I'm Mike Peskin for Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we begin today with the fighting in the country of Georgia. The death toll is in the low hundreds to the low thousands, depending on differing sources. Russian troops have rolled through the capital city of the breakaway Republic of Ossetia. Refugees loyal to Russia have fled north. Those with Georgian bonds have fled south. There is another region of Georgia that might break away. It is on the Black Sea. The Russians like to vacation there. It is called Abkhazia. They have been being issued Russian passports for years now. Perhaps that will be the next region to defect, because right now Russian troops are amassed on the border. If the war escalates, the superior Russian military could even attempt to overthrow the Georgian president. But perhaps Russian leaders will calculate that as an overreach. The Georgian president has already asked for a ceasefire. Joining me now to discuss everything that's going on is Stephen Pfeiffer, visiting fellow in foreign policy at the Brookings Institution. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. Indulge me. I'm going to jump around the timeline. I want to know how we got here and where we go. But first, let's talk about right now. Right now, does it look to you like Ossetia will no longer be a part of Georgia?
Well, I think what you've seen now is the situation has gone well beyond South Ossetia. I mean, the scale of the actions, bombings throughout Georgia, a possible naval blockade, suggests this is not just about the South Ossetia. It really is a reflection of Russian unhappiness with Georgia's westward course over the past 10 years.
Now, how far will Russia go? Literally, how far into Georgia, and how far will it take it militarily and diplomatically?
Well, what we're seeing right now, again, is air attacks that have gone throughout Georgia, not just in South Ossetia. Reports that the Russian Black Sea Fleet has gone to sea with the aim of blockading Georgia. And you had mentioned that second breakaway region, Abkhazia, reports that Russian forces are being deployed into Abkhazia. So at this point, it appears to be much broader than just South Ossetia, which was the reasons the Russians gave on Friday. The Russians have been very unhappy with Georgia's westward course. The Russians have been trying over the past several years to reassert a sphere of influence in the former Soviet space. They've been particularly unhappy about Georgia's desire to join NATO. And it's personal. They don't like President Saakashvili in Moscow. So I think this is designed to inflict significant political and military damage on Georgia and perhaps bring down Saakashvili as president.
Well, let's get into the heads, if you will, and you are an expert, so you can. You're asked to do this, of the Georgian leaders, Medvedev and Putin. Right now, reclaiming, this is how the Russians would see it, reclaiming South Ossetia, that would be very popular. And also taking
Abkhazia.
Abkhazia would probably also be a popular move because those people identify with Russians. Beyond that, do they risk popularity? Do they up till now, has it all been easy decisions for them?
Well, on the Russian calculation, there is support in Russia for South Ossetia and Abkhazia, where the populations have expressed a desire to affiliate more with Russia than with Georgia. But you know, this is a question that the Georgians have to be involved in because those two areas are legally a part of Georgia. It's interesting, though. I mean, what I've seen is some indications that the Russian press is perhaps not reporting on the full scale of Russian activities in Georgia. So there may not be a full appreciation in Russia among the Russian public about how badly this crisis is spinning.
Because right now Chechnya is functioning as a part of Russia, but of course that was a bloody war and became very unpopular in Russia.
That's exactly correct. And even though the U.S. government, and I was in the U.S. government at the time, the U.S. government was very concerned about Russian use of force in Chechnya. The first principle of American policy on Chechnya was Chechnya is a part of Russia. We do not recognize a right of Chechnya unilaterally to leave Russia. Unfortunately, the Russians have chosen not to apply the same rule with regards to South Ossetia and Abkhazia.
Well, that also brings us to Kosovo, because I think the Russians probably would argue the same should have been true for Kosovo, and the West should not have allowed it or at least recognized it after it broke away from Serbia. The West did. Some say that laid the groundwork for the situation we're in now.
The Russians make that claim, and others argue that. I think that analogy is a bit stretched. I mean, recall back in 1999 what was happening in Kosovo, where the Serbian government was using force and had driven hundreds of thousands of Kosovo Albanians, the majority population in Kosovo, had been driven out of Kosovo. I mean, it really was massive ethnic cleansing. That's a very different situation from the breakaways that we've seen in South Ossetia and Abkhazia, where you didn't have those commensurate type of Georgian actions. So the analogy is a bit of a stretch.
The other thing that's going on in terms of if you want to analyze things about who's aligned with the United States and who's aligned with Russia, Kosovo is more of a United States alignment. South Ossetia is more aligned with Russia. But if you just judge it based on the popular will of the people in those regions, South Ossetia, most of the people living there, correct, wanted to not be part of Georgia, just like in Kosovo, most of the people living there did not want to be part of Serbia.
That's probably true, but here's where it gets into the question of, you know, how you define state borders and state sovereignty.
Right.
And particularly when you have the breakup of the Soviet Union in 1991, which was, you know, happily a fairly bloodless event. But if you suddenly every little piece that wants to claim a national identity break away, you're going to see people breaking away from not only just the Caucasus Republic.
Well, thinking, you know what, Stephen, I got it. It's probably hard for you to hear me because this phone line isn't really working well. So we're going to put you on hold for a second. I want to put our number out there, especially if you are someone either from the region or has specific knowledge. Maybe you're hearing reports, firsthand reports back. I know it is hard to get calls in and out of South Ossetia or Georgia, but our number is 646-778-3729, 646-778-3729. I am Mike Peskin for Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And we're speaking with Stephen Pfeiffer, who is with the Brookings Institution. Let's see if we have reestablished him on the line. Okay, not yet. These are, I guess, cell phone communication in and out of the Brookings Institution is also compromised. So if we do have any calls, I'd be especially interested to know, where are you getting your information? I was Googling this, and there is an enterprise called Russia TV, and it's broadcast. Well, I know the people broadcasting it have English accents, and it seems to be modeled on the BBC, but it seems to be news from that region of the world from a Russian perspective. So, for instance, claims of ethnic cleansing on the part of the Georgian government are all over that broadcast outlet, and I haven't seen similar claims from the West, although the president or the former president and premier of Russia, Vladimir Putin, has said that the West has been covering. He has a criticism of the West media coverage. He thinks that the West has been too pro-Ossetia, too pro-Georgian in its coverage. Let's take a call now from Emily in Brooklyn. Hello, Emily.
Hello.
Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. What I was calling to mention was I have several years of Russian language study under my belt, and I've been reading the headlines on Izvestia.ru, the newspaper, the Russian newspaper Izvestia's website, and there are headlines that are very anti-Western, such as one that was up this weekend saying Western weapons killing civilians in South Ossetia.
And, which is a reference to the fact that the U.S. has been funding the Georgian military, especially since the Georgians supported the United States in the war in Iraq.
That's right. And also claims of, the charges that the Georgians have been committing genocide in South Ossetia. And I'm just surprised that none of this seems to be getting covered by the press in the States or in the other Western countries.
Yeah, you noticed the same thing I have, which is charges of ethnic cleansing and genocide are running rampant through the Russian press. You just are seeing a lot less of that, if any at all, in the responsible Western press. But thanks. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, and also Russian bloggers are arguing about whether Georgians are engaging in ritual killings of civilians, and some terrible stories on the blogs. And it's so different from what we're hearing in the mainstream press right now that I'm a little worried that we're not getting the full story one way or the other.
All right. Thanks very much for your call, Emily.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Let's go now to Jim in South Orange. Hey, Jim.
Hi. How are you?
Hi. Go right ahead.
I just think that this is exactly the kind of situation that this administration has left this country powerless to address. It's squandered our moral prerogative and our perceived ability to lead in a situation like this by taking us into an unjustified war in Iraq. We no longer can go to countries like the Soviet Union in a situation like this and say, you know, follow our example. This is not the right thing to do, because we have already shown that we are perfectly willing to lead wars of aggression.
All right, Jim, thank you for that call, and I want to put that right to Stephen Pfeiffer, who's with us now. Hi, Stephen. You're back on the line? Pfeiffer,
yes,
sorry.
I am.
Yes. So I did want to ask you about what the U.S. role has been. Jim was making a claim about the U.S. has lost moral authority, so the ability to, you know, shame an international actor. But in the case of Georgia, it's much more specific than that, right? The United States has been very pro-Georgian, as Georgia has supported us in the war in Iraq. How has that contributed to what we're seeing going on now?
Well, I mean, certainly the United States has seen Georgia as one of the small former Soviet republics that has tried to build a democratic state, tried to integrate it to Europe and the Euro-Atlantic community, basically tried to get things right in terms of transforming itself. So there's been a lot of support for Georgia going back over the last 15 years. And again, that probably plays badly in Moscow to the extent that Russians have decided that Georgia drawing closer to the West is somehow a bad thing for Russian security.
Well, some of the claim is that because the United States was so pro-Georgian, it emboldened the Georgians to think that perhaps if it came to war, they'd have a big, powerful ally to the West to having its back. In fact, the New York Times reported today with all these Georgian soldiers retreating, saying, where is the United States to help us? Was Georgia wrong to have that impression based on positive comments that George W. Bush and other American officials have made?
I think actually Washington has been very careful in the last several months to make sure Georgia understood how far America's support went. And my sense is that there was a pretty clear understanding in Georgia that if they somehow got into a shooting war with the Russians, they might have American political support, but they could not count on military support. And I think Washington was very careful in terms of sending signals like that.
So maybe
sure that there was no misunderstanding in Georgia.
Yeah, maybe the Georgian leadership understood it, but they were happy enough, or somehow the impression that the Georgian troops and regular Georgian people took away was different. Could that have been the case?
That often happens. I mean, leadership can have an understanding, but it may not yet be shared out with the rest of the population.
All right. So, again, some phone line problems. Let's see if we can take another call. Katya from Queens. Hi, Katya.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, go right ahead.
I'm a Russian speaker, and I do read the news in Russian about what's happening. And what was interesting to me is how differently U.S. media covers it compared to Russian media. It seems like in U.S. there are a lot of assertions made, and very often what's overlooked is that Russia actually responded to what was a Georgian movement. So everything was peaceful until Georgia actually entered the area, and then Russia responded. So it's not necessarily a Russian attack on Georgia. It's a Russian response to Georgia's movement. And that's something that I feel is grossly overlooked and sometimes not even reported in some outlets, such as the New York Times.
So if you're able to call from different sources, do you get a more complete picture from just the Russian media? What's the Russian media not reporting that you actually learn from either listening to NPR, the BBC, or so forth?
Well, it seems like Russian-speaking sources just focus on facts, and in U.S. sources, very often, even the opening statement in any article says that, well, it's Russia attacking Georgia because Georgia is pro-Western. And I think the picture is somewhat different if you just focus on the facts. Georgia moved into the capital of South Ossetia, and Russia responded by moving tanks and protecting and territory that it actually does have, I'm not sure if it's jurisdiction, but it does control or has peacekeeping forces in that area. So again, if you just focus on the facts, it's not necessarily as bad as it might look if you read some of the U.S. article where, well, Russia is trying to take away the freedom in Georgia.
All right.
It's not.
Katya, thanks, Katya, for monitoring the news from around the world and the Georgian and Russian news. Stephen Pfeiffer, you're back with us.
Yes, I hope, and hopefully better this time technically.
Ooh, that sounds good. Now I can ask you many, many questions. Let's look to the UN. Both the United States and Russia kind of regard the UN. They both have veto power on the Security Council. They kind of regard the UN as optional. Is the solution going to come out of the UN, do you think?
One would hope it might, but again, with the Russians having veto power, they can certainly block any resolution by the United Nations that would be critical of Russian action.
And I guess the question that everyone wants to know, how likely is it that the Russians take this all the way to the end, deposing the Georgian leader? I know it could happen. How likely do you think that it will happen?
I don't think you're going to see the Russians trying to completely take over Georgia. But what they're trying to create is a situation where they create sufficient military damage, and they sufficiently humiliate Saakashvili that he may just fall internally. I mean, I think that is very much a Russian objective at this point.
And who's going to take away lessons from this? Other former Soviet republics who are getting certain ideas?
Well, I think a lot of people are going to take lessons with, including many countries in the West. I mean, there's a recalibration of thinking now going on about, one, what does Russia want? And two, what instruments, what methods are Russia prepared to use to achieve those goals? So I think people are beginning to think, now, what does this mean for how you are going to deal with Russia in the future, where it is prepared to use military force in this way against a very small neighbor? It's not a good picture.
When the Soviet Union was the so-called evil empire, in the words of Ronald Reagan, it was not a good thing for the world, but it was an easy thing to figure out. There were two superpowers. There was a counterbalance. Now it's a little confusing. The United States is clearly a superpower, but how are we to regard Russia? A regional power? Someone who can exert influence in their part of the world that we can't really stand up to? Do we have to recalibrate how the United States thinks about Russia?
Well, Russia is certainly recovering from the situation in the 1990s in the aftermath of the collapse of the Soviet Union, particularly with the high energy prices. The Russian economy has boomed over the last 8 years, and with it you've seen a Russian effort to reassert its place both on the European stage and the global stage. So the United States is going to have to be prepared to address that. Hopefully, we can find ways to work in a cooperative manner. It doesn't necessarily have to be competitive with the Russians, but this example of Georgia is not going to make defining a more positive U.S.-Russia relationship any easier.
Nancy from Little Rock, Arkansas, I believe you have some firsthand knowledge about what's going on in the region?
Yes, I do. I was actually living in Georgia and working there at the end of 2006, right after Russia put their first embargo on the country. And so I've stayed in contact with a lot of people there. And I know that the Americans living there, they're on notice right now from the U.S. Embassy that they're supposed to get on a caravan to Yerevan, Armenia, at any given time, as soon as the embassy calls, to leave the country. And so they haven't done that yet, but that's what I've heard. And from the Georgians there that I've heard from, they're really upset with the situation. They're upset with Saakashvili because their country is struggling, and this only puts a harder damper on them economically and dampers their whole development process, and they're stuck. They can't leave.
So the Georgians, what did they want to happen? Did they not want Saakashvili to try to hold on to these republics?
Well, they want them to, but they don't think that they have the capability to actually put a solid stance towards Russia in this situation. And so they don't have the military capability, and they don't have the financial capability to make that a stronghold of theirs.
All right. Thanks very much, Nancy. And Stephen, that was going to exactly what you were saying. No matter what happens, even if they don't roll into Tbilisi, this could seriously weaken the Georgian president, very pro-Western president, educated and worked here in New York City for a while. That's got to be bad news for the United States, no?
Certainly. I mean, the United States has supported Saakashvili. We've seen him as somebody who's trying to move Georgia in the right direction. But as a broader principle, you don't want to see Russia using military pressure, actual military action, to begin to press neighboring states to change their leadership. So, that is not a good habit for Moscow to fall into.
Stephen Pfeiffer, visiting fellow in foreign policy at the Brookings Institution. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.